This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. There is a bit more road noise than usual here because I have my windows down at the moment, so let me take care of that. And let me put my glasses on here and we'll be good. So, it's been a good week. It is Thursday. We're trying to get back on schedule. Not forget to record the podcast. So, it hasn't necessarily been an exciting week. You know, I mean, it's just things have gotten done. Yay. We're moving forward. The temperatures are warming back up. We have had a gorgeous, gorgeous week of it. But now we're getting back into kind of more typical temperatures for this time of year. And so the steering wheel is hot. The car was hot. But we'll be okay. Unless the poor little recorder overheats because it's sitting in the sun. So we'll see. I am heading home at the moment. We're going to get there and then just almost immediately turn around and go and grab Aiden. But for the moment, I'm heading home. Anyways, my beloved is actually out in California for a week. We took her to the airport yesterday, got her dropped off. She got out there safely, so yay. She's having a cousin's trip. So all the cousins on her dad's side of the family, I think, are getting together out there in Fresno, and they're going to spend multiple days out there, and then my beloved will be back next Wednesday, so I'm sure she's going to have a wonderful time. In other news, I did do Star Trek Day last Friday, got that finished up. Oh, and since I recorded on Saturday, I probably mentioned that last week, so that was fun. I'm not intending to do any new costumes between now and the end of the year. Although there is one day in there called Love People Day, and it's fine. It was a throw-together costume, and Love People Day is a real thing, and it's a serious thing, you know, and it's like trying, I'm not sure what we're doing here. Oh, someone is slowed down trying to turn in, but there's somebody else. Okay, we got that. But Love People Day is a serious day, and it was started by a church, and, you know, you're supposed to show your love for people and doing things out of the kindness of your heart, kind of a random acts of kindness day, that sort of thing. And so my response to Love People Day was to go get a big bear inflatable suit and make a t-shirt for it that says free Hergs, because bears don't know how to spell. So it's free Hergs, H-U-R-S, and then Love People Day on the back, misspelled as well. Because bears love people too. They're crunchy. So that's, you know. But it's not necessarily great, but it's fine for the end of September. But at this point, I don't think I'm going to do anything else. So I think that's where we're going to be. I would have to throw something together really quickly at this point, since it would be only be 2 weeks away. It's just, I still have this little in my spirit about, well, maybe there's something better and maybe there's something I could throw together quickly. I've investigated a little bit. I just haven't come across anything. So I'm probably just going with the bear costume. And that will be that. But aside from that, the rest of the year is planned out on costumes. It's stuff I've done before, but they're all good costumes. The one costume that is fun, that is so much fun this year, is my Mad Hatter Day costume was just a standard off-the-shelf Mad Hatter costume, but people really love the Mad Hatter. I was really surprised when I had wore that costume at the response that I got to the Mad Hatter costume. They loved the Mad Hatter, which of course is October the 6th, I believe. Because the Mad Hatter has a hat that he wears, and there's a card in the hat that says, in the style of, which we presume means in the style of that hat, and then there's a 10-6 on it. Which people assume, I think, is whatever it is, 10 pence, 6 shillings, or something. But then people have taken that 10-6 and converted it to a date, October the 6th, and then they have declared October the 6th to be Mad Hatter Day. I've probably mentioned this before, but I just love it. 10-6 is also Get Funky Days. So when I found that out last year, I took it as an opportunity to build myself a funky costume merged with a Mad Hatter costume. And so I got the shiny purple jumpsuit and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was fun. It was just a lot of fun. So I am going to do that again this year. We will be going up probably to the Ren Fair sometime in there. And so I may only wear it on Friday, but it should be fun. So anyways, costumes are all under control, and made all our deadlines on the costumes this year, including, you know, the Star Trek costume and Mr. Potato Head and stuff. So it's been a good year for the costumes. We've been able to get everything done that needs to get done on time, on schedule, to a level of passable mediocrity. So they're good. So the other thing is, I did land book 23 last weekend. I don't think that was on Saturday. I think I landed it on Sunday, but I was close. I did get that landed on Sunday, so I'm working on cover now. I've got my read-through done. That went fine. It accomplishes what it needs to accomplish. That's book 23. So unless people just hate it, I'm off book 23 and on to book 24 after I get a cover done. And I've been thrashing around a little bit on the cover, trying to get ChatGPT and the AI image stuff to do what I'd like it to do, but I think I'm good now. So I've got, you know, I think I've got all the pieces I need. I now need to take those pieces and start merging them in. That should be fine. So next couple of days, I would expect that I am going to get the cover finished up. And then I'll get the cover files built. I have the internal file built. Get those all uploaded to Kindle Direct Publishing. Get this one in the tank, or copies ordered. Get in touch with my beta readers and say, hey, here we go. You interested in doing one more? So most of the beta readers I have at this point are committed. So I would expect I'll just have those same beta readers again for book 23, and then we've got one more, which I will hopefully get started on in 2 weeks or so, or a week, maybe next week. We'll see. I know what I need to do in the last book, and book 23 did allow me to get done some of the things I wanted to get resolved. Quite a few of them, amazingly enough, all dovetailed together to get that done. And so that's good. I have fewer things to take care of now in terms of resolving storylines, but those storylines are coming together as well, because obviously I've been thinking about book 24, and I can see already how to weave a bunch of those storylines in. Now I just have to get people their hero moments in book 24. And then, you know, then we'll go from there. But I have 450 pages to get people their hero moments and get things resolved, and I then end the book. I have known how the book ends from the beginning because we're just writing it to scripture, and scripture is quite clear how things end at the end of the millennium. So it's just a matter of bringing my writing in line with what is clearly prophesied. There's room for interpretation on a lot of it, and I will take that room for interpretation, but there are certain overall things that have to happen, and I'm going to do my best to get all those included. I have set up to get them included. We'll get them included and wrap up this series that I started writing in 2014. Get this wrapped up in 2026. So yay. It's been amazing. It's been a really, really good project. So this week I came across an interview that Tucker Carlson had done with a man named Dr. Kirk Moore. And I had heard mumblings, just slight here and there's of his story, but I hadn't really heard the long form of it. And, you know, you would think by now that I would have heard everything that I needed to hear, at least within the genre and within the type of things that were done to COVID dissenters. But I have to say that what was done to this doctor was amazing in scope. Because he dared to stand up to the COVID narrative. So he was, in the beginning, he was, you know, rah-rah for the COVID stuff. As his background, he's a plastic surgeon from Utah. Military family background, his dad was a test pilot, 100 plus missions in Vietnam. He initially, in March of 2020, took COVID seriously, heard that there was supposed to be a lockdown, called his office manager and said, you know what, they're talking about a lockdown, let's go ahead and close the practice because we don't want to be, you know, getting people sick and spreading. He said, once we closed down, I started doing some research. And he said, within 48 hours, I had read enough and done enough research that I realized there was something terribly amiss. And to his credit, it only took him 48 hours to figure that out, because he had access to research journals and articles, and, you know, obviously had access to a lot of other fellow medical practitioners that he could consult with. He did his research. He decided that it was, quote, all fake, unquote. Now, that's not necessarily the characterization that I would make for COVID, but he's a medical doctor, and he looked through the stuff, and he decided that it was all fake. And the reason that he decided that it was all fake is he claims that by January of 2020, there was only 44 total COVID cases worldwide and only one death. Now, I don't know where he's getting those figures, but he also said there were basically three big red flags for him when he did the research. And I actually completely agree with all three of these, if I remember what they are. So I do have some notes here. So his first big red flag was the, quote, no treatment unquote, policy. He said that the government and Fauci said that there was no treatment for COVID. And to paraphrase this doctor, he paraphrased Fauci as saying, just wait until you're dying and then call the ambulance. Which is ridiculous, which was always ridiculous, and I knew it was ridiculous at the time. And this doctor said this violated basic medical practices. And he said the basic medical practice is that doctors always treat flu-like symptoms. He said this was comparable to telling breast cancer patients to wait until a tumor is huge and metastasized before we're going to treat it. He said there were treatments. And I've related a couple of times the story of the doctor that I heard. I don't think it was this doctor. I think it was another doctor that brought in his staff and told them, look, this is a respiratory virus. It's not novel. We've dealt with coronaviruses before. We're going to treat fevers. We're going to treat coughs. You know, we're going to treat whatever histamine responses. And we're going to help our patients get better. And when that doctor started talking about that, including an NPR interview that I heard personally, he then got contacted by the medical board and they said, you need to stop talking about this or we're going to pull your license. Now, that is a very odd response. And Dr. Moore ran into this same problem. What he initially decided to do was that he was going to treat patients with the Zelenko protocol. That Zelenko, I assume, is another doctor. And I think he said that this was a protocol that was initially designed for SARS-1, which SARS-2 had a lot of characteristics of SARS-1, shared a lot of the same genetic base. On the basis of that, then, they assumed that the protocol that worked for SARS-1 would work for SARS-2, and they had big success with it. What was that protocol? Well, it was hydroxychloroquine, erythromycin, and vitamin C, D, and zinc. So basically, when he had a patient that caught COVID and they came in, they prescribed them hydroxychloroquine and erythromycin and then some vitamins, C, D, and then the mineral zinc. And ta-da! He said zero of his patients died, zero went to the hospital, and zero were intubated because they treated the symptoms and the patients didn't get worse. Now, obviously, we can't scale one doctor's experience to an entire country. But I also heard of something similar that was done by a doctor in South Africa that I have mentioned as well, who was treating patients, treating their symptoms, and then recognizing that when the patient got to about day 7 of contracting COVID, their bodies were going to go into a cytokine storm if their immune systems weren't very good. And as soon as their bodies got inflamed, what they would do is they would put them on antihistamines of a variety of sort. It just had to be something that would knock down that histamine response. And once you knock down that histamine response, then all of a sudden his patients could breathe again. And it was just that easy. And it was the same thing that happened with my wife, Lynette. We were watching, sure enough, around day 7, day 8 of her infection, her blood oxygen started dropping. I looked at her and said, sweetie, you need to call the doctor right now. Get a corticosteroid inhaler because that's going to knock down that inflammation. She did. day or two on that, her blood oxygen level was right back up. She was fine. Didn't go to the hospital, didn't get intubated, didn't die. As opposed to my buddy, who I didn't say that to because I can't remember at what point, you know, in the whole pageant this was. Maybe I didn't have the piece of information or something. I can't remember what happened. They basically told him, yep, just go home if you can't breathe. We'll give you some oxygen. If you still can't breathe, go to the emergency room. Goes to the emergency room. They put him on, you know, in ICU. They intubate him immediately. Well, then that's 50% of the people died, you know. And they wouldn't give him anything. So, you know. So anyways, the first big red flag was this no treatment policy. And he said the second big red flag was the global lockstep. Every single country did exactly the same thing, same policies simultaneously. Hydroxychloroquine was taken off the market in France. It was over the counter before. Dr. Moore found he couldn't order hydroxychloroquine for like 6 to 8 months. It was completely unavailable. The coordination, he said, that was there was impossible unless it was planned in advance. And it was planned in advance because there had been simulations run by various organizations over and over and over again. I think the one that I looked at was from 2017. It was Johns Hopkins University. It's probably still out there. It was called the SPARS epidemic. And it is chilling to go out there and read through the materials and then read the questions, the study questions at the back of each chapter, because it was the roadmap. They rehearsed this in those simulations, including down to how do we convince the populace that the vaccine we're going to develop is safe after they hear that we've given immunity to the pharmaceutical companies. It's literally one of the discussion questions. So that was his second red flag, which I agree with. And then the third was the vaccine mandate. Because Bill Gates said nothing gets back to normal until there's a needle in every arm. So they were saying that 8.4 billion people need to be injected to be contributing members of society. No informed consent was given. He said that the product sheets in the early days that were supposed to tell you what all the possible side effects were, when you pulled them out of the COVID vaccine box, it would just say intentionally left blank. So... which I didn't know that. So in other words, they just started injecting things into people's arm and the people had zero chance of giving informed consent because nobody knew what was in the thing. Okay. And according to this doctor, he said all the animal studies with mRNA plus lipid nanoparticles, he said all the animals died. No, I hadn't heard that before. He said the last scientific article on mRNA and lipid nanoparticles said that this technology was not ready for human use. And then 9 months later, it was approved for humans. So there you go. Now, it's a fascinating podcast. You can find it on YouTube. The title of the podcast is Bill Gates, Truth About Vaccines and Big Pharma's Plot to Destroy Doctors Who Questioned the Science. So what this guy did is then they went on to talk about the immunity that the pharmaceutical companies have from prosecution on these vaccines, which is crazy, especially since he says that the law that provided immunity for these childhood vaccines actually says that the judicial branch cannot review these immunity laws. Which is, that's not constitutional. Because the judicial branch is charged with reviewing laws. And he says, and I've heard this before from other people, that there are no placebo-controlled studies that exist for any current childhood vaccine. And how the drug companies get around this is that as soon as they get a vaccine that goes on the child immunization schedule, they say, well, if you don't give these to children, it's unethical. So we can't test them against the placebo. So in other words, there's no placebo testing on these vaccines. They just develop it. They say, oh yeah, this works. And then they start shooting it into kids. And we don't know how well it works. We don't know what the side effects are. We don't know if the side effects are worth. I mean, I told you the story about a young man who was given pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine, and he was having seizures shortly after that, you know, was vomiting, was aspirating it. You know, basically, Dustin said that, you know, with as long as he had that, all that aspiration in his lungs and oxygen deprivation, and everything, he said that kid's life is ruined. Because we don't really know how safe these vaccines are. Anyways, so Dr. Moore's solution for this was he registered with the Utah Health Department as an official vaccine provider. He was given all kinds of doses for vaccine, for the COVID vaccine. He was given them. They threw them out. And then what he did is he told his patients, look, I can give you a COVID vaccine shot if you want it, or I can give you a saline shot and fill out a vaccination card for you. Never charged the patients to do this. He asked for $50 donations to political organizations, but that was it. He treated 1,937 patients this way over 2+ years. Never advertised. It was all word of mouth. Because that's how he had decided he was going to approach this. Well, of course, the government finds out about it. And I mean, you know, by the time it's all said and done, they're trying to charge him with, you know, trying to get him life imprisonment. I mean, there's a whole thing about his defense. It's really fascinating. So you should go listen to the podcast. It's really fascinating. You know, tried to destroy his life. The man has spent $700,000 to $800,000 in legal fees, 2.5 years of his life. He eventually got pardoned by Trump. Didn't get pardoned by Trump. He eventually got the case brought before the new attorney general, Pam Bondi, and she just wrote a tweet and she said, we're done. I've told them to stop prosecuting this guy. This ends now. And so she just threw out the case and said, we're not going to prosecute this. So anyways, but he goes on to say, you know, the key takeaway here is how far the government will go to crush anyone who challenges the official narrative, even when it's a person who's a licensed physician acting in his patient's best interest. Now that one of the things that he said that was really, really interesting was he said, according to the AMA, in their published documentation, they say in their published documentation, because you're thinking, wait a minute, he gave fake shots and gave them vaccination cards, you know, wait. According to him, in the AMA's printed guidelines, they say clearly in there that it is inevitable that doctors eventually will run up against legal boundaries. And the AMA's recommendation is that if it comes down to a matter of legality or by doing what was in the best interest of your patients, you should always do what's in the best interest of your patients. Fascinatingly enough, when they were putting him on trial and he wanted to mount a necessity defense to say this was a necessity because this vaccine was harming people and I wasn't going to give it to my patients in good conscience, the judge threw out that defense and said, you cannot bring in patients to testify this was what they wanted. You cannot bring in patients to testify that they've been harmed by the COVID vaccine. You cannot testify yourself as to what your standard motives are. I mean, it was just like, they clamped down on him and did not allow him to defend himself because they didn't want anyone on the stand saying anything bad about the COVID vaccine. It's amazing. It's just amazing. So I would recommend that you go and you review that because it really is a fascinating tidbit of history from the whole COVID debacle. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.